Hello again, I'm Kathleen Dunn. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Thursday, the 18th of November. And our guest this hour is Lori David, who's put together an absolutely perfect book for the times that we gather at the table. The book is The Family Dinner, Great Ways to Connect with Your Kids One at a Time. The book is more than... Well, it's about the importance of the table, the importance of a family time every day, be it breakfast, lunch, or dinner, where you gather at the table and you can help make in the food and you can have wonderful conversations, and they really carry on and they're important in all aspects of your life as you're growing up. It's an important time. And it's something that we're not doing as much, I guess. We've always done this in our family. Everybody's grown now, but certainly when I was a kid, we did as well. She cites some statistics like this. Children who are overweight eat 50% of their meals in front of a TV. And so you just sit there and you eat and you don't talk. And sometimes dinner is, you know what it's like to go out for dinner. You go out with your friends and you have great conversation, and dinner is an hour and a half if it can be that long, or it's a half hour, but at least you're having meaningful interaction with each other. Lori is our guest this hour. She is also the producer of the Academy Award-winning documentary An Inconvenient Truth. She founded the Stop Global Warming Virtual March and launched the Stop Global Warming College Tour with Sheryl Crow. She is a regular contributor to the Huffington Post and is author of The Down-to-Earth Guide to Global Warming. And this book, I'm going to ask her about Grandma Minnie right away, is dedicated to her Grandma Minnie, who never made a family dinner where she didn't forget a side dish in the oven. We'll be welcoming phone calls. Our number is 800-486-8655. And our email address is talk@wpr.org. Hi, Lori. Thanks so much for being with us.
It's so great to be here.
So tell me about Grandma Minnie. I love that.
Well, you know, that's a verb in our house because it's called doing a Grandma Minnie now if you forget a dish. And that's, you know, it's an inherited quality, I believe. I don't forget dishes when I'm setting the table, but I do forget ingredients sometimes when I'm making cooking from a recipe.
Oh, you do? So how does it turn out?
Well, it almost always turns out, but I have this, you know, I'm a little recipe challenge, which is why I love the recipes in this book. They're very, if I can cook them, anyone can cook them. But you realize there's a skill to following recipes, which is that you really need to read the whole thing first before you start cooking.
Yes, you don't have the patience for that, neither
do I.
You
know, I don't do that, and I get mad at myself every time. And then when I finally get to something, I said, oh, boy, I forgot that. So I'm getting better, and these recipes are very easy to follow, so no one should have that problem.
Yeah, and I love all the other things that are in this book. You talk about sitting down with your daughters, two bright, happy teenagers, engrossed in a conversation that ranged from national politics to binge drinking on college campuses to who was doing what to whom at school, and you thought, wow, I've done something right as a parent.
Well, we spend so much time, you know, beating ourselves over the head about all the things we do wrong, right? And so I had this epiphany one night sitting, you know, at a normal school night dinner, and that was that dessert was long since consumed, and there were my two daughters still at the table talking to me. So I just had that moment where it was like, okay, I started this ritual when they were young kids, and now I'm reaping the benefits when they're older. Because as your kids grow up, it does get harder and harder to find time to connect with each other. But dinner in my household has been a non-negotiable. And this is a tradition that is really falling by the wayside, unfortunately. And there's a lot of cultural reasons for that. You know, obviously the two working parents and, you know, today after-school activities are planned during dinner time. There's long commutes. There's, of course, the distraction of the computer and the cell phone, and both the kids and the parents are addicted to these things, and it's very difficult to get everybody to come together and purposely be a family, which is all the more reason why we have to do it. I mean, there are some things that we should be holding on to for dear life, and one of those rituals is family dinner.
Your family dinners, though, growing up, sound like they were a little troublesome.
Yeah, they were. I mean, I remember very clearly every night thinking, okay, who is going to leave the table first in tears? Because there was a lot of tension at my family dinner, and there was always someone getting in a fight. And I also remember wanting to leave as quickly as possible to get back on my bicycle, right, to get away from the table. So as a parent, you know, I kind of benefited from that, too, because as a parent, I decided, you know what, I don't want to repeat that history. And the truth is, I started the ritual. You know, there's tons of staggering research about the power of family dinner. But when I first started doing it, I did it because I was desperate for some happy family cozy moments. And I realized very early on that you really have to create these. You can't just wait for them to happen. So
right.
I put my focus on dinner. Look, everyone had to eat, and it seemed like the perfect time to do it.
Right. And it started, did it, with Taco Tuesday?
I love this idea of naming your nights, and this worked really well for me and my family. So we started with a ritual, Taco Tuesday. So what would happen is my kids would wake up, and they'd realize it's Tuesday, and they'd be all excited. Yay, it's Taco Tuesday. So all of a sudden, right there, dinner
great.
Was a party. So we went from Taco Tuesday, we did Shabbat Friday, we did, if it's Sunday, it must be Chinese food, so Meatless Monday, we just name our nights, it makes it more fun.
That's just a great idea. Then it makes it really something to look forward to.
Exactly. And invite friends over. Invite your kids' friends over. Invite the parents of your kids' friends over. And fill that table with people. Because what that does also is it just, everyone's on their best behavior. The dinner becomes the evening's activity. Everyone lingers longer. And you learn from each other. So I love having as many people at my table as possible.
Yeah. Our youngest son, who's now at college, was always, every day would say, now I realize why that was important to him because of your book. I'm thinking, he always asked, what's for dinner? What's for dinner, Mom? And I'm thinking that goes way beyond what am I going to eat for dinner?
Yeah.
It's what is it? What's the event?
Well, here's the thing. I mean, you're setting up, you doing the ritual in your house, you're setting it up so that your kids will do it in their house. I mean, all the things, there's so much we learn at the table that we're not even conscious of. And really, it's not just, it's not just good table manners. It's learning how to listen, learning how to have a conversation, and learning how to debate, and all these things that happen at the table that we're not really aware of. But I'll tell you something. The professors at Emory University have been studying rituals for decades, and their question was, why is the dinner table so powerful? And guess what? They figured out the reason. The dinner table is the number one place where family histories are passed on.
Oh, yes.
Okay, and it's the knowledge of where your family came from that builds resilience in kids.
Mm.
And so when family dinners decline, we stop telling these stories.
Oh,
I mean, we could have a whole generation of kids growing up not knowing anything about their family history. I mean, this is really important stuff. So invite grandma and grandpa over and start telling those stories. Even if your kids, if they roll their eyes, just ignore it. They love hearing stories about you when you were little.
Right. And that family history is something that they really seem to enjoy as well. At least when they reach a certain age, they start telling it.
I love this idea, and I think I talk about it in the book, of making assigning stories to different children in the family or different members of the family. So they become the keeper of that story. And then when you have a big holiday celebration, they get to tell the story. And then they'll have that, to pass on when they have kids, too.
We were doing a show yesterday with Robert Dalek about Kennedy, who was elected 50 years ago. I can't believe it was that long ago. And he spent a lot of time in his book talking about the family dinners with the Kennedys. And I know that you spoke with Bobby Kennedy Jr. about family dinners in your book as well.
Yes, we have a beautiful sidebar, and there's a great picture in the book of an early family dinner. And here was the amazing thing. And they weren't unusual, but I think that family took this a little further than most families did. In those days, when they had dinner, first of all, Bobby Kennedy would come home from work and then go back to work. But it was so important that they have a sit-down family dinner together. It was a priority for them. But the kids had to come to the table prepared. They had to be prepared to participate. They had to have poems memorized.
Isn't that something?
They had to have biographies written of prominent figures.
Oh my.
They had to have the hair combed and the shirt on and the nails clean. And listen, to this day, there isn't a member of that family who cannot recite poetry. And I think that's a really interesting thing. And if you have young kids, we have tiny little poems throughout this book. What a great self-esteem builder to have your child memorize a couple of lines and be able to recite it at the table and entertain everybody. It will make everyone feel great.
And you asked some poets. I believe Maya Angelou was one of poems that we should all know. We should all have memorized.
Absolutely. And I have an interview with Maya Angelou that will bring tears to your eyes. It's one of the most beautiful stories, which she told me on a phone interview, and it's in the book. And it will inspire families, I'm sure of it. So even if you're in the bookstore and you just open it to that page, read that Maya Angelou interview.
She's an extraordinary woman, isn't
Amazing.
She? Yeah, she is. Poetry. Well, now that's an interesting thing to bring to the table. Have you memorized poems? Maybe you have now because you wrote this book.
I memorize poems now because my boyfriend has a 7-year-old daughter, and we're giving poems to her to memorize, which she loves doing, and so now I'm learning some.
Oh.
But just a couple. I mean, it's great to just know a few and recite them. And, you know, there's all kinds of things to do at the table with books and with reading. And one of the things that we have going on right now, which I would love everybody to know about, is on the Huffington Post, every Friday, the editors are putting up a family dinner download, which will be a news story from the week, a very short synopsis, snappy synopsis of that story, and a question for the table. So Friday afternoons at 5 o'clock, this goes up, and you can subscribe to it, and then you get this little news story for your table, and next thing you know, conversation is started, and you're talking about things other than what you're eating and how was your day. So that's a big part of the book, too, all these great conversation starters, because the truth is, the dinner is about sitting down, number one, and number two, talking.
It sure is. That's a great idea, the family dinner download.
I love it. I'm very excited. We've had two up already. The third one's going to go up this week. And they're really, they're age-appropriate stories, and they bring up, you know, conversations about values and morals and trustworthiness, and I think they're really wonderful. So that'll be a great service to everybody, I think. But we have lots of great ideas in this book. Another one is, you know, I read the newspaper every day, and on the obituary page of a newspaper are some of the most fantastic stories, and they're very short, and they're always about people you never heard of who have done fantastic things in their lives. And they're just great little excerpts to bring to the table, and we have quite a few of them in the book here, too, as well.
I read those pages now, too. I always thought it was because I was of a certain age. You reach a certain age and you start reading the obituaries.
Exactly, exactly.
Right. We always have had, we've really pretty much done family night dinners, but we get into some rip-roaring heated political discussions at our table sometimes.
Well, that's fantastic, and I would love to have dinner at your table because I would love to be a part of that. And I can't tell you how many people I interviewed for this book, and there's words of wisdom throughout it, who said that they, you know, they got their values, they got their social activism, they've got their passion for causes from the dinner table, from their parents, discussing the issues of the day and debating issues of the day and bringing articles from the newspaper to the table. And so many people said that to me. And that's another reason why this time is so valuable. It's not just about refueling. It's really about teaching values and morals and teaching your kids how to debate politely and disagree and all those things that we really kind of take for granted. But if we're not sitting at the table sharing a meal together and talking, what else are we all doing to purposely be a family at the same time in a day other than sleeping?
Yeah, exactly.
So it's really critical time, and you know what? The research is staggering, and really, children who have family meals do better almost in all areas of life, and the research, you know, backs this up big time.
Well, do you need certain kinds of rules, Lori, so people are speaking one at a time and everybody needs to be heard thoroughly before the next person speaks?
Well, I have a chapter in the book, 10 Simple Steps, and I'm calling them steps instead of rules so everybody doesn't seem too draconian. But here's the thing. Yes, you need some rules, and in the book, I talk about the rules I've used that have worked. But, you know, you can adjust this for your own family. But, of course, rule number one, no screens of any kind. That's non-negotiable. We don't debate it. You do not bring your phone to the table. And if you do, and I see your phone at the table, I get the phone. And trust me, your kids do not want you having their phone. So guess what's going to happen? They're going to stop bringing them to the table. So that's number one. Another huge rule I think that's really important is everyone tries everything. And this isn't about eating everything on your plate. That was in our day, and we know that doesn't work. Okay, I spent half my meals trying to, you know, feed food to the dog under the table that I didn't want to eat. But it's everyone has to try everything because, number one, it shows respect to the person who prepared the food.
Yes.
Very important. And number two, it can take up to 10 to 12 times to taste, just tasting something, to develop a taste for it and develop your palate. So we have to give kids an opportunity to develop their palate. That's one of the things that happens at the table. So everyone tries everything. And, of course, one of the rules in my house, and this was important to me, was water. We drank tap water in a glass from a glass pitcher. And here's the amazing thing. Now that my kids are older, they crave water. They associate eating meals with water. Even when they're in a restaurant or at a party where they could have soda or juice, they choose water. And they learned that. That didn't happen naturally. And if you think about the issues today with obesity, 10% of children's calories are coming from soda. 10% of their calories that are
terrible.
Helping them, their bones grow and their brains grow is coming from soda. So, you know, and it's an economic issue. Think about what you spend on sodas and juices. You should be serving water. We don't drink enough of it, and we shouldn't be drinking it from plastic bottles. We should be drinking it from glass, especially if we're in the kitchen. So that's one of the rules, and I'm telling you, it served me well. And one last rule I'll throw out to you, which is, one meal, no substitutions, okay? Cook for your family. Don't make kids' food. Make family food. And if the food is delicious, and this book is filled with fantastic, delicious family recipes, if the food's delicious, everyone will eat it. So you're not a short-order cook. It's not about you jumping up from the table constantly, you know, getting things. It's about putting the food on the table for the family, everyone coming together and having a moment of calm and joy in your day. I mean, this is really a gift every day is giving us, and we should be holding on to it for dear life.
And light a candle and maybe put a little bit of lemon or something in that
exactly.
Water.
Simple things. Show your family this is important. I love you. You love me. This is our time together. And it's as simple as lighting a candle. It's as simple as sending your kids outside to collect 4 or 5 leaves and then putting a leaf on each plate. And we have a really sweet picture of that in the book. It's as simple as assigning each night to a different child in your house or an adult in your house and saying, hey, you pick something from the house somewhere, some room that's important to you or that you love, and that's going to be our centerpiece tonight. And guess what we're going to do? We're going to talk about that. And next thing you know, we're telling stories about the family. So these are not things that, you know, that cost money. These are just things that take a very short amount of time but are going to, you know, send the message to everybody that this is why we're a family, to share moments like this.
Lori David is our guest this hour. Her latest book is The Family Dinner, Great Ways to Connect with Your Kids One Meal at a Time. And there are a lot of recipes. There are poems. There are interviews with famous people about their dinner times, and they are interesting stories, or they wouldn't be in the book. We're welcoming phone calls for Lori. Our number is 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. And our email address is talk@wpr.org. talk@wpr.org. I'm Kathleen Dunn. You are listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We start our phone calls with Mary on the road. Hello, Mary.
Hi there. Amen to everything that you've said so far. I can remember great heated political conversations for hours into the night with my family, and it really helped me identify who I was, and it was critical to my moral and upbringing. But one of the things that a tradition that I established with my family is my mother told me when my first daughter went to kindergarten, she said, when your kids come home from school, feed them. And so we established a tradition of having tea time immediately when the kids got home from school. Because after that, you know, there were all sorts of school activities and things were fresh in their mind. And we would sit down with the kind of rules that you were talking about before and traditions. And it was something that, you know, they brought their friends home, and their friends were amazed by this proper tea service.
Oh,
I think this is fantastic.
I do too.
And I actually, in the book, The Family Dinner, I have a beautiful photograph of me having tea time with my kids, and I do the exact same thing. And I have to tell you, if when your kids come home from school, look, they've had a stressful day. They're about to go do homework. They need a break, and you need a break, and you should grab this time, even if it's 20 minutes. All you have to do is light a candle and pour some tea, and you will not believe what they will tell you. I mean, they're so grateful for the break. Eat a little healthy food, because the other thing about snacks is that we're grazing too much. Everyone's eating too much during the day. You want your kids coming to dinner hungry, right? So if you give them a healthy snack when they come home from school, they'll be hungry by the time it's dinner time again. And it's fantastic bonding time. I totally agree with you. Keep doing it.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Now, here, people have problems in relationships and families sometimes, so take this on. And I know you've been divorced, Lori, too, so take this on in the answer. Lisa says, the family table is very important to me, but my 14-year-old usually hates me and A, doesn't want to eat what I prepare, and B, no one talks. Last Thanksgiving, I spent the entire day in the kitchen preparing a glorious meal only for my partner and daughter to eat, conversation free in about 15 minutes.
Oh, I love this person.
It was so depressing.
This person has to buy this book.
Yeah.
Okay? This book is going to change her life. And, you know, forget about the holidays, okay? Thanksgiving. And, I mean, we're talking about the week, okay? We're talking about, you know, the all the days in between before holidays. And she needs to get this book and start cooking from it. And she needs to set some rules herself and make this a priority. And I know that she things will shift for her. And listen, we teenagers, let me tell you something. My teenagers, everything you've heard about what's going to happen when your kids turn into teenagers is true.
I know. I've just been through it. Yes, yes, yes.
So that's why it's so important to, like, you know, forget about the eye rolling. Forget about the fact that she hates you. Of course she hates you, and everyone will tell you, well, that's normal. That's the state. They're supposed to hate you. Well, it doesn't make it any easier. But I say, you know, put your foot down. Make some great family food and bring to the table things to talk about. Don't rely on the conversation to happen naturally. Throw a question out, and I would encourage her to say, tonight, play the pet peeve game, okay? This is something your 14-year-old will love because she'll have plenty of pet peeves. We all do. And go around the table and everybody say what their pet peeve is. And then go around two more times. And next thing you know, you're talking about things that you wouldn't normally be talking about. And dinner's going to be fun and it's going to be memorable. And she's going to come back the next day and want to do it again.
Judith in Superior, hi.
Hello.
Hi, Judith. Go ahead.
I just want to say thank you, thank you, thank you for writing this book. All three of my daughters are going to get a copy for Christmas.
Oh, that's wonderful.
I nearly came out of my seat listening to your rules or suggestions because that is exactly what I did with my children, and they do all appreciate it. Now they're all grown and out of the house. But my comment is that kids and families are too overscheduled today, and they need to stop and take that time to come to the family table. That is where I learned the art of conversation, my social skills, everything that you were saying. And one thing that I did with my children when they were growing up is I limited them to one extracurricular activity at a time. And there's just so many children that are, you know, in an after-school sport, and they take music lessons, and they take dance lessons, and, you know, who knows whatever else. And that's when we're running to the fast food joints all the time.
I completely agree with you, and here's the irony of it. The most important activity your children can do is sitting down to a meal with you. That's the most important activity. And I have to say, you know, schools have to take some responsibility for this, too. You know, in the old days, you had your after-school activities at the school. At 5:30, you got on the bus and you came home for dinner. Everything wasn't scheduled at 6 o'clock and 7 o'clock across town. And so we have to, you know, again, this comes back to the parents. We have to make a decision. You know, what's the added value here? What are we rushing to? I mean, we should be rushing to dinner is where we should be rushing to, because this is where we get nourished emotionally and physically. And, you know, the fast food thing is a big problem. I mean, we're spending double the amount of money we used to on food outside the house. And guess what? When you get takeout and you go to restaurants, you have no idea what you're eating. You're almost always getting, you know, quadruple amounts of salt, sugar, and fat. And when you cook at home, you know what's in it. You know what the food is. So, you know, we have to sort of look at our lives and say, okay, what's all the rush? What's all the hard work for? It's for these moments. It's for the fact that it's for the time when we can all sit at the table and love each other and have fun. I mean, it's a big part of this is having fun, too, because, you know, life is too hectic and it's too hard, and we need to have a good time. We need to bond with each other. We need to feel fulfilled. We need to have some joy. And I really believe that, you know, dinner time is the place to get all those things.
Thank you, Judith, for your call. Tina in La Crosse. Hi.
Hi. Wow. I was active duty, and I raised my boys, and the ones that came later, like the true Irish rovers that we are, we could spend an hour and a half cooking the food, and then either it's been eaten from the pot, or you come and get it as you feel. Now, the boys are now men, excellent cooks, and we've often spent 20 minutes to 2 hours, depending on the size of the meal, debating on whether we should use lemon juice or vinegar to brighten the soup, along with the current politics. And
Well, you did it. You did it your way. Okay. Here's what you did. You did, instead of sitting down at the table, you guys had that bonding time in the preparation and the cooking of the food, and I think that's beautiful. And by the way, people don't, you know, people look at this as a chore, where you know the preparation time can be like the best time, really, when you're in the kitchen and you're doing it together. Put some music on, light a candle, you know, and enjoy the process of making the food. There's a great interview in here with Pat and Gina Neely, and they're amazing chefs from the South, and they talk a lot about what you just said, that that's their time to connect with each other. The kids are sitting right nearby, they're doing their homework, and the two of them are preparing their meal, and they say it's the sexiest time they have.
And I think a lot of families can relate to that. We all gather in the kitchen as food is being prepared and people are talking. And it's particularly true of holidays that are coming up, Thanksgiving. You spend a good portion of the day doing that.
Right. But I really think I want everyone to, you know, holidays are great. But honestly, for me, and I think for a lot of other people, you know, when I look back on my favorite memories of growing my kids growing up, it's not holidays and it's not even fancy vacations. It's the meal after meal after meal.
Right.
We don't
right.
have to wait for holidays to capture that feeling. We can do this every day. And if you can't, again, if you can't do dinner, do your ritual breakfast. Do the tea time, like the caller said. I mean, find a time to sit and share the meal and share and look each other in the eye over food. I mean, it's just a great gift that each day gives us.
Mm-hmm. Tina, thank you so much for the call. Our number is 800-486-8655, and our email address is talk@wpr.org. Lori David is our guest. The book is The Family Dinner, Great Ways to Connect with Your Kids One Meal at a Time. You also ask some famous people what kind of music they listen to when they prepare their meals and got some great answers.
I love that. Well, I'm fortunate enough to have a couple of girlfriends who are rock and roll stars, and so I, you know, it was like, okay, well, because you know, setting the mood for yourself is just as important as everything else. I think all of this is part of it, and I am always listening to music in the kitchen. It's the first thing I do when I walk into my kitchen is I turn the music on. So I happen to know Sheryl Crow very well, and Bette Midler and Carole King, and so they all, in the book, we have their suggestions on things to listen to. And it's funny, as I got those answers for them, I went out and I made sure I had all the CDs of the music they suggested, and I cooked with them. So one night I felt like I was cooking with Carole King because I was playing her music, and another night I was cooking with Nancy Wilson from Heart because I was playing all her music, and I got turned on to some new things, so that was fantastic. Also, there's a recipe in the book by Bryant Terry, who's a wonderful soul food chef and vegan chef as well. And he always associates food with music, too. And on his recipe, he has a list of CDs he listens to when he's cooking. So hopefully people will get exposed to some new music, too.
And how about you? What do you listen to?
I listen to all kinds of things, but I love I love Cat Stevens, and I love Nora Jones, and I love classical music. So I do a mixture of lots of things. I love Coldplay, so I put everything on.
Yeah. I'm really into Frank Sinatra these
Frank
weeks.
Frank Sinatra. I love Frank Sinatra.
Yeah, he's a genius.
I love Chet Baker. I love, you know, I love everything. I mean, different days, different moods.
Right. Yeah, right. Mary in Pewaukee. Hi.
Oh, hi. I'm so glad to be on the air, and I love this show, and I love the guest. Lori, sounds like a wonderful book, and it seems like when you started talking that I went, yes, yes, that's exactly what I've been trying to say and post and talk to people about, because of all the problems within the nation and the world with people being overweight and not coming together and the fast foods, and we just need to stop and take a moment, be calm, and all the things that you're saying would be such a special thing to be if people could do that every day.
Well, it's amazing that diet-related illnesses is the number one killer in America now. I mean, half of all American kids are overweight. This is, you know, this is unacceptable. And it's not a coincidence that all these health-related epidemics have gone up as the ritual of family dinner has declined. It's not, that's not a coincidence in my view. So, you know, the television is a big part of the problem, and obviously, you know, all the takeout that we're eating and the fact that we're not cooking anymore. I mean, it's stunning to me, really, that the Food Channel and all these food, the cooking shows on TV that everyone is obsessed with.
Yes.
So people are watching cooking.
Right.
But they're not translating into cooking themselves.
Yeah.
And I really hope this book will inspire people to do it. And really, if you have, you know, a little bit of time, there's great recipes in here. And if you have a Sunday afternoon to cook with your kids, which is a great thing to do, then there's things that, you know, take a little bit more time. But it really, it's 20 minutes. You can have a beautiful big bowl of black bean soup. You can make a green salad, and you're done. And you'll have enough leftover for, you know, 2-3 meals later on. So, you know, it's really about our priority. We found a lot more time to spend on the computer. You know, we can take a little bit of that time and spend in the kitchen, particularly since the benefits are so gigantic.
Now, a lot of families, I want you to talk about divorce for a moment, because you found a way to include people at your table who you used to be married to.
Right. Well, here's the thing. Okay, so I'm divorced. I used to be married to Larry David. And, you know, half of all marriages end up in divorce. And so that's a lot of rituals in danger of dropping by the wayside. As soon as you go through a crisis like this, you know, you stop doing your routine. And honestly, it's more important than ever, because your kids need the stability. They need the security. They need to know, look, we're still a family. The family's changing, yes, but we're still a family. And that message was so important for me to give to my kids that I insisted we continue having our family dinner ritual, okay? So for the first couple of weeks, the first month or two, and I write about this in the book, and there's pictures and everything about this in the book, I was like, you know, dinners were a little tense, and I, every day at 5 o'clock, I would call family and friends, and I would beg people to come to dinner. I'm like, please, you have to come to dinner tonight, because I just needed the tension, you know, relieved.
Right.
And when guests come over, you know, it became a little more fun. Eventually, I started inviting Larry to dinner, and, you know, I got a lot of no's, and then I finally got a yes. And we had this ritual that we had done, which was, if it's Sunday, it must be Chinese food. So, you know, that was something he was familiar with, and so he finally said yes. I even got him to go pick the food up, which I thought was very clever of me. And he came over, and we had Chinese food. And, of course, that was a very, you know, quick, awkward first meal. But guess what? We're now having dinner together every week or every week and a half, and it's fantastic. And the table and the rituals and the food and the games we play, the conversation, things we did at the table, all helped us get through this.
Yeah. It's important. It's very important. Thanks, Mary. Merlin on the road. Hi, Merlin.
Yes, I get quite a, I really enjoy this, but I got a different take on dinner. I was raised in rural Wisconsin during World War II and up through, so that tells my age. But dinner was at 12 o'clock and supper was at 6 o'clock.
Mm-hmm.
And you probably grew some of your own food, too.
And we lived in a rural setting, and for instance, if somebody came over, and it seemed like sometimes the bachelors and some of these guys would all just kind of show up, you know, kind of at the right time.
Yes, of course.
And, you know, if we didn't eat together, or they didn't come in to eat, then they were asked to. That was a slap in the face.
Right. Oh, how beautiful. Well, that was a community. So you were, this was community building. And that's another point here, is that the family table is the first community your kids are exposed to. And it's preparing them for all the communities they're going to be a part of later on in life. And in those days, I'm sure you guys grew a lot of your own food, right? Did you have a vegetable garden in the backyard?
Oh, yeah. Mother had a good garden, yes. And, you know, we also talked about politics. I became a certain member of a certain party because my dad, he was pretty staunch on this, you know, and we talked about everything and our daily work that we had to do. And I think a lot of the family breakdown we have now, and we got a lot of it, is due to families not having this time together. I think I'll just close with that. Thank you.
Well, I couldn't
agree with you more. And I think just hearing you talk about those meals, I mean, that just makes me, I want to go to that table so badly. And I think that's really the point of my book, is that we have to hold on to the things that worked from the past. Like, we can keep, you know, progressing, and we can, you know, time marches on, but we have to hold on to the things that worked. And family dinner is one of them. So I really hope the book will inspire people to get back to the table.
Don't you love his memory of the bachelors showing up at a certain time?
No, it's fantastic. And, you know, here's another thing you want when you have kids growing up. You want your kids' friends coming to your house.
Yes. Oh,
you
yes.
You want them mm-hmm. coming over for dinner. You want to be the house where people hang out in.
Mm-hmm.
And one way to do that, one great way to do that is to, you know, make great dinners, make food, invite people, invite friends over, and make this the place that everybody comes to because it's fun and loving, and the house smells good from, you know, all the great things you're cooking.
Thank you, Merlin, so much for your call. We have a couple lines open. They've been busy, so if you want to get through, now would be the time for you to give us a ring, 800-486-8655. The email address is talk@WPR.org. Orly is next from Chippewa Falls. Hi, Orly.
Hi. Okay, mine was, every meal was a sit-down meal with my parents. I grew up in a family of 13.
Woo!
Wow.
And I mean, every night would be a debate, and it never failed. I mean, you'd have the point where we were screaming back and forth across the table, whether it was politics, I don't care what it was, there was always something going on. And I say I was one of the middle kids, so I think I tended to be more of a mediator throughout my life. But one of my more favorite memories that come from this, my mother would make some unusual things. And one of the things she made was chicken foot soup. Now, that is taking literally chicken feet and boiling them up and turning them into chicken noodle soup.
Oh.
And when my older sisters would bring home boyfriends, what do you think they would get but chicken foot soup? And depending on their reaction, you know, they would put, and some of them would pretend like it didn't exist. They would push it off to the side and keep eating so that they wouldn't create a problem. But, yep, every meal was that way.
Okay, so you know what? Here's the thing that's so interesting. I wish I could have gone to that table, too.
Oh, me
is
too.
That, you know, people get civilized at the table, right? And they learn some incredible skills. I've talked to some CEOs of companies, and they've said the number one thing they do when they're hiring somebody is they take them out for a meal,
right?
Because they want to see how they behave, whether they can handle things, how they treat the wait staff, whether or not they can continue the conversation and keep it going through a meal. And all those things you guys learned at your table. And look, you took those skills later out into your life. It's incredible. But it also makes me think of one other thought, which has a lot to do with some of the recipes in the book, which is that this idea of participation food at the table. So, for example, when you're making soup, say you make chicken noodle soup. Here's a new way of serving it. You take the broth and you put it into a teapot, hopefully an heirloom or your grandma's teapot. And then you take the shredded chicken and you put that in a bowl. And then you put crunchy raw cabbage chopped up and crunchy carrots chopped up and bean sprouts and some herbs. And you put all these things in separate bowls on the table. Everyone gets to make their own soup, put the ingredients in it that they want, and you have noodles in a bowl too. And then you go around, you pour the broth into each bowl. Now, all of a sudden, chicken noodle soup is like a memorable meal. And your family will love this idea, and it will get great conversation going, and they'll demand it at least once a week that you do this.
Mm. You just may want to skip the chicken feet. That's a great story, Orly. You need to write that up and publish it somewhere. It's just terrific. Our phone number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. Lori David is our guest. Lori's been with us before. She is the author now of The Family Dinner, which is a very creative and important book that has not only recipes, but it has great thoughts about all that takes place and how important the family dinner is. They matter. They really matter. It's great ways to connect with your kids one meal at a time. 800-486-8655. Our email is talk@WPR.org. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public. Our next caller is Lisa in Spring Green. Hi, Lisa.
Hi. Hey, I just thought I'd share something that made an improvement. We, in our family, we always felt like family dinner was important, but as our kids got to be teenagers, we made this rule it more applies to mom and dad than anybody, and that is that the things we talk about are to be happy things. It became really tempting for me to use that time when I had my kids sitting there to tell them all the things they needed to do, all the things they hadn't done,
right.
all of the things that were, you know, irritating me. And we just decided, no, you know, all of those things can be addressed after supper another time. We're going to just enjoy being together and talk about happy things during supper.
You're a very wise woman.
Mm-hmm.
Very wise, because that's exactly right. In fact, you know, it's funny, the Shabbat dinner, the concept of Shabbat dinner for the Jewish religion is that exactly, that this is a time you have to put all your worries aside. You cannot talk about anything at that dinner that isn't happy and joyful. And I think that's great advice for everybody, because it's just, you know, otherwise you just get into this cycle where it's all about what homework do you have, or, you know, what you need to do. And that's just more pressure on everybody, and it isn't fun. And the whole idea of dinner is that it should be fun. It should be nutritious on every level.
This idea that we usually talk about what we're grateful for at Thanksgiving time, Lori, is something that we can certainly incorporate in all our meals.
Well, I have a whole chapter about gratitude, because honestly, you know, the best place to express gratitude is when there's something to be grateful for right in front of you, and that's food. And I love this quote from Dr. Wendy Mogul, who says that gratitude is a muscle, and it needs to be exercised. And I totally agree with that. And so we have a big chapter about that. I love that the Obamas in the White House play a gratitude game at their table. They call it Roses and Thorns. We have a version of it called Highs and Lows, which is basically the same thing, which is you know, go around the table and you say, what was your high for the week or the day, and what was your low?
Mm-hmm.
And it requires some reflection, and it opens conversation, and you really get a little look into what, you know, what were the low points of your kids' week that week. And,
right.
And it's a wonderful game to play. The other thing is, you know, we have this concept of quality time versus quantity time. Like, those things really don't apply anymore. You know what the most important thing is? Focus time. Because we are so distracted. Everyone is so distracted. And that's what you can do at dinner. You could have serious focus time. And our kids are desperate for our attention. And so this is a perfect time to do it. And gratitude is something that we should be, you know, expressing at all our meals. But at the very least, have an appointment once a week to do it.
Thanks, Lisa, for the call. Anne in Milwaukee. Hi, Anne.
Hi. Thank you for having me. I'm calling to tell you my short experience growing up in the 30s. My father worked until probably 10 or 11 o'clock at night in his business. And when I was a little girl, he was never around. And my sister and I had my mother all to ourselves. And then all of a sudden, they organized the union, and my father was home at 6 o'clock at night. And he would be there for dinner.
Oh.
And I remember, first, when he was home, I just hated it, because we had to share our table, our conversation
right.
with him. But as the time went on, we began to appreciate having him around. He was home on weekends, and he was home every night for dinner, and it was really a wonderful thing.
Mm-hmm. I'm sure it was wonderful for him, too. Mm-hmm. There's a little sidebar in the book about the U.S. Army, that at Fort Hood, they've issued a new order, which is if you have a family, you need to be home for dinner by 6 o'clock. And that's an order from the U.S. Army. Because they realize that, you know, if their soldiers spend more time with their families and are at dinner, that it will make them happier, it will make them more resilient, it makes them less likely to abuse drugs or alcohol or get into car accidents. And it's a policy that was instituted in 2009, and they even the Army gets the importance of family dinner.
Mm-hmm. Thanks, Anne. What a great story. This show is just bringing so many images to mind, isn't it, that are so pleasant.
It really, but see, that's the thing too. You know, the fact that the images are so pleasant, that's my whole point, is that we have to, we shouldn't be losing this. You know, we shouldn't be letting fast food and takeout and, you know, eating out of plastic containers take over one of the great joys of life.
Right. Here's a wonderful email that's come in from Patty in Denmark. My husband and I would have our two children say thanks for the good dinner after they asked to be excused from the table. It was fun to hear them say it on days when they clearly didn't care for dinner or were simply in a bad mood. The fact that our family sat down to eat for a family dinner was a contributing factor to being asked to host an exchange student. We did this for 2008-2009. He was expected to thank us for the good dinner. Thanks for the nice show. I feel like I did some right parenting.
Oh, you see? Isn't that a great feeling?
Yeah.
I say, you know, we all do this. We're all so racked with guilt about everything that, you know, she did do something right. In the book, we actually have lots of quotes from famous people, little and graces and little blessings that you can say at the table. So if you have if you need a little help or some suggestions on how to express gratitude, there's tons of ideas inside the book. Also, by the way, taking your kids shopping with you is a way for them to learn a little gratitude. What things cost and how much time it takes and, you know, carrying the bags into the house and then unloading the bags. And, you know, our kids are really, you know, we do have a culture of immediate gratification, and we have to work harder. I mean, it's not in the day of some of your callers where you went in the backyard and you grew your own food and you understood where the food came from and you understood how difficult it was and the challenges of the weather. We have kids growing up thinking that food grows in supermarkets. So it's really important to look for opportunities to sort of teach these lessons to our kids as well, I think.
Sarah in Vernon Hills, Illinois. Hi, Sarah.
Hi there. Well, I remembered this game we used to play. You know, I always forget that we ever did this because I was really small. But my mom would make like one or two dishes, and then she'd make. We would write up a menu, like it, pretending we were in a restaurant.
Uh-huh.
And my dad would take us to drive around the block, and we'd say, hey, there's a house. Oh, here's that new restaurant. Gosh, it looks just like a house. And then we'd come in, and we'd say, oh, what interesting decor. It looks just like somebody's house. And then, you know, we'd pretend to order, and it was a blast. It was really
a fantastic ritual. What a great
really?
Idea.
That's
Did you
fun.
Get dressed up for dinner?
I can't remember. I think we did. Yeah.
That is fantastic. I have a daughter who loves to cook, and she and her girlfriend often start a restaurant where we get invited. They call it KR Pinky's Restaurant. I don't know what the name means, but we have to come to the door and we have to pretend to pay, and then we sit down. They have prepared the food, so that's a very fun thing.
That is fun. Thanks, Sarah, for the call. Susan, hi. Hi, Susan.
Hi.
Hi.
I have some wonderful memories of childhood. We always had dinner together. Sunday dinner was always with the grandmas coming over, and Mom always made fried chicken and homemade pie. And it was just a wonderful bonding family time. My sister brought her kids. My brother brought his kids. We took our kids. And that's spread out into our generations. And our children were always home for evening meals, and it was a great time. Just wonderful memories. But I have a funny story. My uncle tells this. I'm not sure that he did it, but he says he did. He had some unwanted guests for dinner. They would always show up right at dinner time. It reminded me when you were talking about the bachelors. Well, these folks just would always kind of show up at dinner time. And so they were getting tired of this because they brought unwelcome conversation. They weren't very good guests. So one night, my uncle calmly gathered the plates up after the meal, put them down on the floor, and let the dog lick them off, and then very calmly went over and put them back in the cupboard.
Oh my
God. No.
And they didn't show up for dinner anymore.
Oh, that's hilarious. That's very funny. Well, obviously, whoever was cooking was too good a cook because they would come to whether they were invited or not. I love these memories. I love the fact that the associations people have with certain foods. There's a recipe in the book for Aunt Isabel's icebox cookies. And apparently, there was never a time you would walk into her house where those cookies didn't exist. And now she's long gone. And, you know, 15 members of this family get all, you know, teary-eyed every time they talk about her and those cookies. So here's another tip for everybody. If you have family recipes, write them down. Because this is the most cherished thing you can pass on to your next generation. And that's one of the things that's given me so much joy about this book, that our recipes are in a book now. And my kids are going to have this forever. Ever, and it's a legacy for them. And
Write down your family recipes if you have them.
Yeah, that's a very good idea. Thank you so much, Susan, for your call. Daniel in River West. Hi.
Hi. I just want to thank you for your program. It's a wonderful program. And I'm just hearing all these stories and thinking about how when I was in, you know, the later years of high school through the last 5-6 years, I would go over to my friend's house. She's a wonderful cook, and we would spend hours prepping the food, and she would put an elaborate spread out on the table, and before we would even eat, she would hand us a book, and we would choose a prayer, a non-denominational mm-hmm. prayer that would bring us together and thank the universe, thank God for this wonderful meal and this wonderful time together. And it was just, I think we spent more time cooking and drinking than we did eating, actually. So
that is so powerful, though, and that exact idea is in this book, that there's little non-denominational prayers and sayings in the book and quotes that you can... My dream for this book is that people are going to have it on their kitchen counter to cook from, and then they're going to bring it to the table to read from, that it's going to be food-stained and tagged and flagged and posted, and people are going to get great use out of it. But the one other thing I think is important to remember for people who don't have a lot of time, to really shift your thinking about what dinner has to be. It doesn't have to be three courses and a homemade apple pie in the oven. It can be, you know, breakfast for dinner. It could be a scrambled egg omelet with chopped broccoli in it. That takes no time at all. It can be soup and a salad. So on the nights that you don't have as much time to cook, take the pressure off of yourself. It could be takeout. You know, try to get healthy takeout and take it out of the plastic and put it in bowls and get your chopsticks out and have a picnic on the floor. Move around your house. Eat in different places in your house. Eat outside whenever you can.
Yes.
All these ideas, they don't take that much time, but they really do make the meal memorable.
Yeah. Lori, thank you so much. Thanks for the book and the conversation. Lori David, the book is The Family Dinner, Great Ways to Connect with Your Kids One Meal at a Time. And thank you to Rhonda Fanning for producing the hour, Chrissy Pease on air production here in our studios in Milwaukee. I'll be with you again on Monday. Thanks, everybody.